We're reading from the writings of Rabash, from the article, The First Innovation. You can ask questions on Cobb.tv. Relevant questions may be aired during the lesson. We're reading from a Rabash article, The First Innovation. All the innovations begin only after a person merits exit from self-reception. And this is the matter of the prohibition on teaching the idol worshippers Torah. Because when a person is in Egypt, he cannot be Yehudi, Jewish, because he is enslaved to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And when he is a slave to Pharaoh, he cannot be a worker of the Creator. This is the matter of the children of Israel are for my sake, meaning they are my servants and not the servants of servants. Because when a person is working for himself, he cannot be the Creator's worker, because it's impossible to serve two kings at once. Only after a person exits Egypt, meaning self-reception, he can work for the Creator, and then he can merit the Torah, the light. It turns out that the first innovation is the exit from Egypt.
It's written so clearly, I don't know what to add. To merely repeat the same words. Whoever is in his egoistic will to receive is called the nations of the world. Whoever transcends the egoistic desire, meaning that he comes out of Egypt, he is called Jewish, meaning that he reaches the unification with the light, with the Creator. The Torah, meaning the light, studying the ways of bestowal, that's possible only when you transcend, when you come out of Egypt. And thus it says that the nations of the world, or the idol shippers, it's forbidden for them to study the Torah. Forbidden, it means that they simply can't, meaning that if you are within the will to receive, it means that you don't understand anything about spirituality and you have no chance of ever reaching it, because you can't even grab hold of the edge of the rope with your desires, with your thoughts. You can't achieve that world, spirituality. You can't touch it, no way. Thus, you need the means, and if you arrange them correctly, then you can reach it. Thus, all of the innovations, of course, they all happen only after the exodus, the coming out of the will to receive of Egypt, and you can't understand anything before that. Before that, we're in utter darkness, and we can only follow the advice of the Kabbalists, eyes closed. That's the only thing we can do, have full trust in them. And we have to understand the extent to which our world is opposite to the spiritual world. And also, it's not 180 degrees oppositeness that we can achieve the light out of the darkness. Our darkness, the Egyptian darkness, is such a darkness that has no direction. It isn't direct or aimed at the light in any way, but gradually, through the right actions, we achieve kind of the right deficiency, which is called, it's all not Lishma, not for her name. And then through the actions by which the surrounding light influences us, we can achieve the exodus from Egypt and achieve Lishma, for her name. Meaning that both these states, they are completely disconnected states. And whoever is in the lower world, meaning in a state of in order to receive, can never understand neither the thoughts nor actions nor of someone who is in bestowal, who is working in order to bestow. Doesn't go along. It's a completely different program. By no means does one cross the path of the other. Because towards the spiritual world, our world doesn't exist. It exists only in man's imagination, in which a person has to be or exist before he enters reality. And besides spirituality, there is no other reality at all that it seems to us, everything that we imagine. It's truly like a person who's unconscious, where he has these different hallucinations. Thus, all the innovations, all of the, how to put it, all the perceptions, understandings, the correct calculations, it's all from that point where you cross into spirituality and onwards. Any questions? Everything's clear. Moshi? What?
Say a person hears these words that the world doesn't exist, it's all imaginary. How do you relate to this correctly? Because it's not felt that way in the meantime.
On our study, we relate only to those people who are with us, that have a point in their heart, and they want to achieve spirituality. Our study is not simply for the masses, for the broad public. They also won't come to listen. Thus, we're speaking as truthfully as possible, as much as we can open and reveal the wisdom we do, and we speak the truth. What if it says that this world is imaginary, that we're as dreamers, and it's an imaginary world, and so on, and the way we perceive reality, all that we study about that. Why do we sometimes have to emphasize it? It's in order to give the negative importance, zero importance to the state in which we are, that there's nothing about it where it seems to you that you benefit something or lose something when you're alive. It's even less than kids playing in a sandbox and discussing amongst them, and they're fighting and they're crying and laughing and happy. At least they're engaged in for them in something that is realistic. We're in a total imaginary form, unconscious. Thus, in order to give zero appreciation to it, if it's possible to call this appreciation, of what we're experiencing now and what we think to be as our life. Yes.
So the benefit of that, if a person is...
The use is only if you can use this imagination in order to reach the truth, the true reality. That's the only use.
To emphasize the importance of spirituality with respect to this imaginary world, yes? This is why Kabbalists tell us that it's all...
Yeah.
Yes.
No, there's no point in disregarding or not disregarding. It's not our business. But in order to emphasize the gap, the difference, in order to help people, it's all for the sake of correction, as the sages say. It's not simply to disregard others. Why do that? If this reality, even if it's imaginary, it exists towards us, the Creator arranged these things, the upper light, meaning it has a certain value, but its value is as something imaginary, as nothing with respect to the ladder of degrees.
Still, I see with you, from looking at you and what you said about Rabash, that Kabbalists treat this reality very seriously.
Because as a result, we grow. This is what we perform in.
No, not even for spiritual development, but in terms of work, in terms of family.
Must.
What's the reason?
You must, because you have to relate to this reality and arrange it correctly, and to arrange, you have to see it, you have to find out that it's imaginary, you have to relate it the way it is, and to organize all your things here. Imagine that you are getting into a sandbox with other kids, and you're playing with them seriously, the way they are. And they're sweating, and they're doing different things. And he took my truck away, and I take a bucket from him, and so on and so forth. For them, it's life. And you delve into it with them and you relate to it all seriously. Why? Because you want to help them organize things such that out of this sandbox reality, they'll grow quickly and correctly. It demands a very serious attitude. It's like a person. The very same way a person in our world relates to a child, to a baby, how much you invest into it, the very same way a person has to relate to himself, to that very baby and child growing within him. And, how to put it, it's forbidden to give or wave anything here. I have to take care of myself and my family and my kids and this whole materialistic world and my necessities and my parents and all these things. I must take care of all this. Even though alongside it all unfolds as something imaginary, regardless. Imaginary, it means that there is nothing tangible about it in all those forms in which the will to receive portrays or depicts it in my mind. It's all with the sandbox and the big and the broad world and the family and the parents and everything else. It's all depicted within my will to receive in order to receive, and I can't correct it. It's on the still level, uncorrectable. Even a great Kabbalist, Rabbi Shimon, also had to eat, drink, make his child and engage in different corporeal stuff, and certainly was concerned with his with life. What will happen with his students? What they were all sitting in the clouds. They didn't have families. They didn't think about anything. Including tooth pain, toothaches. That's what the Rabash told me when I asked him, because back then I worked, I had this dentist clinic, so he said up to toothaches. It's life. You have to sustain them, even, and they have a different problem. The very same way you have the problem of constantly trying to elevate yourself in order to bestow towards spirituality, they have a different problem. They have to keep themselves, they have to keep serious in the sandbox, and they have to do it. And thus, we relate this way to education and to our profession and all those things where a person must provide all his needs. And look what Bala Sulam says about the order of this world until the final correction, how things have to be. And only at the final correction is it canceled, does it disappear from our sensations, because there is no longer a need for this imaginary form for it to exist any longer in our sensations. Yes, Ali?
If our attitude to this world has to be so serious, at least like a sandbox game, as you said, why do we relate to the corporeal mitzvot, what we call customs of tradition, why do we relate to it, you know, not as seriously as we relate to studying a profession, having a job, caring, sustaining your family, and so on? Because there is a direct connection between these customs to spirituality. Of course, it doesn't do anything, okay, but all the great Kabbalists, they carried out the mitzvot, and they were meticulous about Passover, everything else. They did even the littlest things more than regular people. So why do we relate to it differently?
I'm not saying that it's different, but I merely don't want to forcefully oblige people to keep these things. For several reasons. A, first of all, to the extent to which a person feels that all that he's doing is important for spiritual attainment, he'll also feel that. B, since I'm turning to the whole world, and even when I turn to the Israeli nation, I can't turn to them with such a demand that you're coming, you want to study Kabbalah, I also have to keep the corporeal precepts. There are many things that in which we have to show ourselves open to the world. Not open meaning open as come, but I set such conditions that everyone can keep. And it's not that my conditions are such that the door is open but no one comes in. We're in a state where we have to very seriously consider what does educating the current generation mean. If I encompass myself with these conditions that you're talking about, then I cut myself off from everyone. The Orthodox population, they don't need me, and that's for sure, they cut me off. The seculars, they cut me off because they don't need all these precepts. What does he want to repent us or what? And then what? I'm bold on both sides, from both sides. I think that that guy that just came here, whose name is Hillel, who up to a few months ago he was an Orthodox Jew, and he wouldn't have come to us were we to keep very meticulously all those precepts that he escaped in his past. But only because there's relative freedom here, each one can come and remain the way it is, and that there's no external demand for you to be one way or another, both for a guy like you or a guy coming from the Tel Aviv or from wherever, and each one of these can find their place here, and this is how we relate. Afterwards, after a person advances, he finds such actions, he willingly performs certain actions because they remind him of the intention, because we see what it says about an intention, about an action without an intention. It's like a body without a soul. And we want to reveal and correct the soul thus. All of our actions can help us. And also those actions which you call precepts, we call them customs, in order to not get confused. Because precepts, it means correcting the desire. The 613 pieces of advice and deposits, these are called the precepts of the Torah. It's called Teriyag 18 and Teriyag Pkudin, which is the correction of the desire in order to which is correcting the desire in order to bestow. It says so in the Zohar, and this is also what the Kabbalists say. And what we do with our body, even though it's in the imaginary world, and even though these are customs, but it's also important because it reminds us about the spiritual action to the extent to which it does. Of course, it's worthwhile doing, but each one should do it if it reminds him of it. About it. And of course, why was Bala Sulam so meticulous about it? And he even invented a few more such a few more strict laws with respect to the Pesach, because these are signs that remind about the precision of the work with leavened and the evil inclination and so on. That's how it is. Yes, Moti.
You spoke before about perception of reality and about our dissemination. I saw that it's the hardest thing to cross this psychological barrier. For instance, my brother is a doctor, a very great learner, and it's hard for him to get it. He asked, if there's a creator, why did he create everything imaginary? Why didn't he create, you know, earth with real soil and so on? And why is it imaginary and not material the way we actually see it? What's the purpose of this?
Usually, I don't get into such questions and arguments Why? Even though if a person is a dentist and he's very bright and clever, but towards Kabbalah, he doesn't even have the brain the size of a grain,
grain of sand.
Of course, I'm not talking about him, and there's no one to turn to. He doesn't have the mind for it. You can't develop him. His claims are like a child. Why did he create it one way and not another? So you don't get it. You don't understand. Of course, we have claims. Why are things one way and not another, and why is the world the way it is? And from here to the final correction, a person always has claims. And he complains, and that's obvious. But does it help you understand something or not? Why don't you say that about gravity? Why does it work the way it does? Why did I fall out of the second floor? You did. Why aren't you asking about that? We tell a small child, hit the ground, or hit the stick, or hit something. It's actually the same attitude. Why did he do or why did it do what it did? It's nature. That's how it is. Learn why, and until you reach the very first reason, the preliminary reason for it all, you won't understand anything, because it all comes from the thought of creation and cascades from there. You being now in the corporeal world, in your restricted, limited, lowly form, you're asking now about the preliminary thought, the reason for which it all comes, and so only from there can you ask about it. All the rest is a cascation of that very preliminary thought, the thought of creation. So if people start telling me, what, the Holocaust, these problems, those problems, look what he did, there's nothing to talk about. If you really want to inquire it, please go ahead. And with respect to the questions people ask with respect to the state in which they are, there's no question whatsoever. And there are no questions about it, but the blows will come. They soften the person. He'll become a bit softer. You know, he'll learn about it. He'll want to learn. He'll want to study. Why? Because no one wants to feel the blows. In the meantime, he's a dentist. Can't do anything about it. We all went through it. Please go ahead.
I want to go back to talk about Egypt. We spoke about mitzvah, narrow of chassadim, and we didn't speak about
After the exodus from Egypt, I'm telling you seriously.
Is it correct to say about Yam, ocean, the place where Pharaoh drowns, the place where the person drowns as well to receive, that it's actually Rav, the group in the books, after you already leap into the water, yeah, you start diving? So naturally, when your oxygen runs out, you want to quickly go out, and you need the friends to kind of hold you and so you don't lose consciousness.
Keep on going. Keep on going. Very good. Very nice. Okay, yes.
He writes here in the article that it is forbidden to teach, yes, the idol worshippers Torah, those who are in self-love. So what are we doing here?
You're studying Torah? You think that you're studying Torah?
I think so, yeah.
You think so? Forbidden means impossible. There are no prohibitions. It's forbidden to receive the upper light. Receive it, let's see you. What does prohibited mean? There are laws in nature, and if there are laws, then there's no such thing as forbidden. You do something, you get a punishment for it. Prohibition, it means that you're incapable And this is what the Kabbalists tell us, that it's forbidden to teach the idol-shippers Torah, and it's forbidden for them to study. It's because the idol-shippers are incapable of studying the Torah. They don't have the vessels for it. Akum comes from idol-shippers, meaning indirect, those that study, those that work the stars and signs and so on. What does that mean? Someone who bows to his ego, meaning that way you can't work with the lights. You don't have the vessels for it. The entire wisdom of Kabbalah, the Torah, is the connection between lights and vessels. You don't have the vessels, so against them you can't reveal the lights. Thus you can't study Torah. What does Torah mean? The ways of the light spreading within the vessels according to the law of equivalence of form. Yes?
So what are we doing?
We are coming to that. We're using the Torah as the reforming light. We are still using it from afar, from a distance. There are lights and vessels on a higher level. And I'm in a state disconnected from that higher level, from that higher degree, but I want to be in it. So from there, I pull upon myself a certain illumination to the extent to which I yearn for it. Small illumination comes upon me from there, and it prepares me to ascend to that place. I use the Torah as the surrounding light, not as real light. I'm not studying Torah. It doesn't mean to study Torah. Studying Torah, it means how the light spread within the corrected vessels. The relation between the lights and vessels through the screen, or by the screen, that's called Torah. That's what we learn with all the spiritual paltzufim. The will to receive, corrected by the intention in order to bestow, and the light that it can receive in order to perform an act of bestowal and practice. That's called Torah. But, and this is what we want to come to. And thus we read about it, and we aspire for it. And we're trying to do different or perform different actions, take different actions between us in order to somehow bring our desire to bestow. But it comes to us only in an aspect of the surrounding light. I don't know what that is. I only feel from time to time certain changes within me. Everyone feels, what a change. Ooh, this is a change. I understand a bit. I feel a bit. As a result of reading, I feel a bit more. That's not Torah. The Torah, it's clearly, evidently, the desire, the screen, the light, and the connection between the three. And the revelation of the Creator within the creature, the light within the vessel. But using the power of the Torah. Yes, it means I've created the evil inclination, I've created the Torah spice, because it's illumination, not the light, but it's illumination reforms. It's an illumination. Yes.
What do you recommend now for the whole world clearly to focus on in order to really feel the Egypt and truly build a true desire to come out of Egypt?
We have to keep ourselves in a state of elation and not in descent. God forbid any one of us and all of us together, we must not fall into
routine,
mundane matters. And thus, we have to aspire during this Pesach, during this week, we have to prepare ourselves for the Exodus. What is the Exodus? And we have to prepare ourselves for this aspiration, for the excitement. To the extent to which we yearn for it, the lights will influence us. So, we have to do it. Now. We have to prepare ourselves to be connected. There is no single person that can come out into spirituality. As Moses said, I'm not leaving anyone in Egypt, not even a single animal, men, women, elderly, children, everyone. Meaning connection, and connection towards the mutual common exodus. This is what we have to think about and to constantly aim our intention at that. And in a week's time, even less now, we have the holiday coming up. And during this week, what's a holiday? These are external signs, symbols, but within these signs, all of us can be together throughout these 7 days, interconnected through our connection, through the study, through such intentions that will really push us forward. And there are those who are undergoing descents and ascents and different changes. We need all these vessels. We need it all. A person has to appreciate the descent just like an ascent. You can't have one without the other. That's how things are. Yes.
What is the role of the mutual female deficit here?
Extremely important. Very important. I heard that there are different meetings going on both here and also in the world Kli amongst the women, really asking them to introduce this inner influence of theirs upon the men and to be as a trustworthy and to give us trustworthy support.
By what does a person come out of Egypt?
By connecting with others and wanting to be in one man, as one man and one heart with them. Why? In order to discover the reciprocal power of bestowal. Yes, Danny.
So we realize that everything is imaginary in this corporeal world and that we have no clue as to what bestowal is. On the other hand, when we want to talk about the ego, there's tons of examples of power and envy and so on. So even if I wanted to explain to a kid, what kind of examples of bestowal can I give other than shooting an arrow to a friend's heart? Something more practical.
An arrow into the friend's heart. It's also the words, it's not exactly, he says bullets. He means warmth. You shoot an arrow of warmth and love into the friend's heart. He presents it as presence. That's what the Rabash says. How can you explain to a child what bestowal is?
If you can give examples of actions, because there's infinite examples for the world to receive, although it's still not a spiritual ego, but is there something in parallel, just like actions of, in this world, towards bestowal?
We don't have such examples in our world, because any such example is already a spiritual one. A person that's included with others, who's included with others, he's no longer himself. He acquires the general, the collective vessel, but it is he who acquires it. And thus, how to put it? Thus, there's no such example. There's no example for it. In our world, it's obvious that I kind of lose myself as if I don't exist. It's a bit hard to depict. In the spiritual world, it's a bit different. You acquire a new vessel in which your I, yourself, is something else, something different, which has taken on a new form. You have to aspire and yearn for it. I'd recommend to read once again the first innovation. All of the innovations begin only if a person merits to come out of self-reception. And this is the matter of that it's forbidden to teach the idol worshippers Torah. Because as long as a person is in Egypt, he cannot be a Jew. Because he is enslaved to Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And while he works for Pharaoh, he can't work for the Creator. He can't be the worker, the slave of the Creator, because the matter of the vessels of the people of Israel, I can't see anything. Read it, please. I can't see.
And this is the matter of the children of Israel.
And this is the matter as for me or the sons of Israel. They are my slaves, and not to be a slave for a slave, because while a person works for himself, he can't work for the Creator, because it's impossible to serve two kings simultaneously. And only after a person comes out of Egypt, meaning comes out of self-reception, then can he be the servant of the Creator, and then he is capable of meriting the Torah. And as a result is that the very first innovation is the exodus from Egypt. Truly wondrous. All at once he brings in all the definitions. Yes.
If the student adds to this article the principle of none else besides him, and realizes that Pharaoh is also a system operated by the Creator to bring him up, how then to read this article if there is one force and not two?
The very same way. I don't understand what's the problem. Why do you think that these are two forces? It's a single force that introduces these two forms to you.
If the Creator, in order to grow me, sends me Pharaoh so I work for him, what am I supposed to tell the Creator? You have the wrong address, or what?
Why wrong address? You're mistaken by thinking that the Pharaoh is the opposite of the Creator. You have to relate to both of them from the middle point as two forces that want to grow you. On the one hand, a baby is put in the middle of the room and he can't walk, and on the other hand, you stand before him and you wait for him to walk and you tell him, come. So what? Mom's bad, mom's good, what is she doing? What's her evil side? What's her good side? You decide. There's no evil in the world. All the means introduced to us by this upper force, by the single force, are holy means. Pharaoh is a holy force, a holy power. It says so in the Torah that all the names in the Torah are holy names. All of these are actions of the Creator. These are the powers of the single force that operates us from different direction. He works on us from different directions? No, but it's our will to receive that's standing opposite the light reveals the difference between it and the light in these different forms, shapes, and manners, in these 613 forms. All in all, if earlier you thought that there are two forces, Pharaoh and the Creator, you're actually building an idol, creating an idol. And it's forbidden for us to think that. It simply leads you astray from the path and thus forbidden.
When Abraham was told that the children of Israel will be in exile, he realized that it's a necessary part of development. and they actually receive strengthening from that. Now, the children of Israel are in Egypt, and the first, well, after a while, they say, we can't be here anymore, we don't want to be here, we want to leave this state. If it's a part of development and it's a system operated by the Creator, do I need to accept it and agree with the Creator's action, or I should resist it and say, the Creator, you know, I'm not good with this scene in life, can we move on to the next one? Because when I'm under the influence of Pharaoh, it's
forbidden to listen to what you're saying. It's forbidden to listen to what you're saying. Why? Because you're talking about the Torah of the masses, of the bosses, the landlords. Torah interprets everything in a single body. The Abraham within me, when I reach a state where I'm Abraham and I'm asking, what should I do? And he tells me, go on to a new desire. I suppose it's called the land of Canaan. And when I'm in Egypt, when I'm in stress, I'm asking, I'm yelling, I'm crying, it's me. Why are you telling me this with respect to history? And I am always in contact with the Creator, and I only see the extent to which the will to receive that's unfolding. Whom do I identify myself with? The extent to which my will to receive is pro or con, once one thing or another, and I understand that all of its leaps from being targeted precisely, specifically at the Creator is just to show me where am I still uncorrected in order to grab hold of the Creator, and this is the only way that I see myself. I'm here, He is there, and along the way, all these things, deviations, contradictions, it's all in my favor for me to grab hold more correctly of the direct path aimed at Him. What Pharaoh? There's nothing here. My entire evil inclination is in my own favor. Otherwise, what? I'd remain a point. This way, I achieve a 613 times greater state. I become like Him. I grab hold of Him. To a full extent, I acknowledge the whole of reality, were they able to receive and were it not to reveal itself, I'd remain as the small black point. This is the only way I depict reality. Historically speaking, that Abraham said this, said that. Which Abraham? What Abraham? Place yourself in the state of Abraham where the whole world is you and the Creator and all the rest in between you. Then you'll see. What could Abraham do? If a person is in a state where he is opposite the Creator or standing in front of the Creator with the Babylon and all those things, it's all his inner reality. There is no world, no creation besides man. It's forbidden to envision or depict it any other way. If you start talking about the inner work, first of all, you have to form yourself. You have to
balance yourself.
So that you are in a state where the whole world's inside you and you're facing the Creator, and how do you arrange all those things between you and all that you see now? It's that stands against Him. It's help made against Him. Things that stand in the way of your adhesion. And only in a single form, single way. He is the one confusing you. He is the one doing all this. If you relate to all these things differently, then there's none else besides Him, then that's the wrong approach to spirituality. I understand that our life is very confusing, but these confusions, they come on purpose. You have to see anything and everything. Your boss, your friend, the different incidents that happen in the world, you have to see all these things coming from Him. And correspondingly, how do I respond to it? And then it's possible that on the outside you'll seem kind of weird because sometimes you don't want to react to things that we all react to because you let it be, and in other cases you do respond where you see that your correction demands that. To calibrate oneself where there is none else besides him, it means that there is him and me, and in between us the whole world, the entire reality that can awaken only in my perception, understanding, and sensations. It's a must before anything. This calibration is a must. Well, Amikam, let's see you.
We learn that in the upper worlds, lights are received. We learned today that Zeranpin receives for itself and also for Malchut. Now, in my reality, I don't know such a state. I know that I'm receiving. Do I need to distinguish this between something that I receive for myself to something that I'm supposed to keep passing forward to that person in Tel Aviv or north or the south? Or
if you want to become spiritual, you have to think about how can you become a connector between the Creator and the whole world until the whole world will connect as one place, one group. As long as you see the others not being a part of you as a single kli, but you depict them as single souls separate from you. Suppose like in a body where you are connected with them like in a single body, but you have to perform mutual reciprocal work. So you're trying to loyally draw all the light from the Creator for the benefit of the entire body. That is the level of a cell or a single corrected organ in a body. And later, you start rising in connection with others. The more you connect with them, the more you rise to higher levels and degrees. And then this body that includes so many parts and pieces, it becomes for you as something that doesn't include different foreign parts and pieces, but its harmony, its unification truly reaches a state where towards you there aren't any parts there, but it is all one. This is the matter of degrees, where even on the lowest spiritual degree, you already start feeling that you belong to a single body. That's it. That's how it is. Okay. Yes, Moshe.
There's always a problem between connecting two things, none else besides him, and love of others and connection. What can you recommend?
I don't understand why can't you connect the two. Love of others and none else besides him and love the Creator are one and the same, only towards us. Egoistically, there is still a difference, because it seems to me that I'm prepared to love the Creator. What? He's the Creator. And all the others, and all in all, who are they and what are they? I don't know why were they created all together. What? I'll love them, connect with them. Until, again, when I start understanding that this entire system, reality, all people and the souls, it is the system of the vessel, of the place where I connect with the Creator, where to the extent to which I unite this kli, to that extent I become like the light, like the Creator that unfolds within it, within that united desire. And there is no one without the other. meaning wherever it seems, or this whole external foreign reality, the way it seems to me, with people and still vegetative and animate and the people in it, these are parts of my soul, and only that. It's all mine. And the Creator put light, a great, tremendous, whole and perfect light into that vessel, and by that light, that vessel became opposite to the light. And thus, if now I'll connect this vessel out of its hatred, which came as a result of the light that shattered that vessel, if I'll try now and connect all the parts of the Kli, I'll want it to connect, but I can't. I'm drawing the light for it to help me. But if I do that, I correct my vessel, my soul, that vessel, my soul, and all those things that seem to me as if they exist, nothing exists. It's me and the Creator, and there is none else besides Him. He and His name are one. And by this, we will conclude.
Announcements. Rav Lightman's open lecture is held every Tuesday, as well as today, at 7 p.m. Israel time. If you're in Israel, free entrance. And in this Passover, we're all one. We're inviting all our friends and students in Israel to a picnic at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, the 20th. It's in the Yerkon Park in Tel Aviv. For details, go to kab.co.il or 1-700-509-209. Again, picnic for Israel students. And an introductory lecture will happen on Tuesday, on the 3rd of May, 6:30 p.m. Israel time. Here's a clip about it.
An earthquake, 8.9, took place in Japan.
Well, the east is far.
$50 per gallon? It's because the problem in Saudi Arabia.
It's a good thing this car is small.
Vacation, eh? You won't believe it. Sarah, she dumped me. She says I'm an egoist.
Thank God I'm not an egoist.
Radioactive water. Radioactive elements reached Israel from Japan. On the 3rd of May, we will have an introductory lecture all over Israel. We're inviting you and you to hear and listen. For further details, join us. Admission is free. Honey, are you here?
יש מילים בהן בסנו, יש דרכים שלא בחרנו, ובכל זאת התעקשנו לעבור גם אותם. בספינה הזאת כולנו מפליגים מתוך ליבנו, בין גלים האיחוד ובנו לכיוון אחד. זמנים קשים כבר עברנו אז, ימים יפים עוד יגיעו ודאי, אם נתאחד שוב האור עוד יאיר עלינו, ביחד נתפוס את הבחר. זה Yeah.